year.
I know. That's
Good
huge.
times.
Well,
Gotcha.
I think then,
Yeah,
thanks for being
I'm
here.
always
That was good, too.
Yeah, I can't make it to the conference, so tomorrow, so.
Sorry. Yeah.
Huntington, West Virginia.
Okay.
We don't have any info, anybody from prior years because, well, because they don't have a prior year, right?
Recording in progress.
So before we do. After open to comments, then we can. I can't believe the room is cleared out. Really? I was fully expecting to come in by this one. Equipment inside. Right.
Should not say.
But at least we have the.
Decorum, Molly, decorum. This is the last time I have to facilitate one of these closed sessions. Unless I get asked to do it as the VP, if I become a VP. I had to do it when I was the VP for John.
Yes.
We have to. No, we have to have an election. Jane is the vice chair. June? Have to do the election before.
Unless we get to the election. You should have a discussion level one thing that we can discuss and you should do it next month. That'll be just my book.
Oh, yeah. You got that one. Right.
All right, we will now call to order this evening's meeting of the Champaign County Mental Health Board, Wednesday, March 18th, 2026, at 5:45 p.m. in the Shields Carter Room of the Bennett Administrative Center, Urbana, Illinois. May I have a roll call?
Jen Ares.
Here.
Alejandro Gomez.
Here.
Tony Nichols. Elaine Palencia. Kyle Patterson. Jane Sprandel. John Paul Joachim.
Here.
Molly McClay.
Here. Also, Stephanie, were you able to hear all of the hears? Because I noticed some mics didn't light up.
No, I don't have Tony Nichols.
Tony is not here.
How about Elaine?
Here.
Kyle?
No, Kyle.
Jane?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay.
All right. We do have a quorum, so we can next move on to approve the agenda. This is on page one of the packet. Are there any edits, discussion, or would anyone like to make a motion? All right. Seeing no discussion, I will move to approve the agenda as presented. May I have a second?
I will second that motion.
Thank you very much. McClay motions, Sprandel seconds. Any final discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of approving the agenda as presented, say aye.
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 All those opposed, same sign. The ayes have it. The agenda is approved. Next, we will move to the 2026 meeting schedules and PY27 allocation timeline. These are on pages 5-9 of the packet. No action is needed, but I will ask Lynn if there are any items of note in the materials that we should draw our attention to.
No.
I was waiting for that. Any discussion from the board on these items?
No.
I'll just make a note that we have April and May will be, and March will be busy because we have a study session next week. And then in April and May, we have meetings and study sessions to go over applications. Any further discussion? All right, seeing none, we will next move to the CCMHB acronyms and glossary. These are on pages 11-22 of the packet. No action is needed, but any updated items here?
This document is slightly updated. I think Leon might have given me a couple of new items for it, but my preoccupation was with making it accessible, and it's not perfect, but it's more accessible than it was. So we'll just keep doing these. Like every month we learn something new, so we'll update. Anyway.
Awesome. Any discussion on this? All right, seeing none, we will next move to public participation agency input. As always, members of the public are welcome to provide their perspectives to the Mental Health Board. We cannot respond directly to public input, but we may use it to inform future actions. If you would like to give public input, you can give some now or at the end of the meeting. There will be another point in time to do that. And you can do so by filling out a comment card and handing it to me. You can approach the podium. And if you are on Zoom, you can put something into the chat or you can raise your hand. So we do have a public comment that has been requested on the comment card. So I will call that person up first. But if there's anybody else who would like to speak, you can use any of those other methods to make yourself known as wanting to speak. Just a few other notes. Agency representatives and others providing input which might impact the board actions should be aware of the Illinois Lobbyist Registration Act and take appropriate steps to be in compliance. And I may limit individual time to 5 minutes and our total time to 20 minutes. So with that, I would like to have Claudia Lenhoff come forward to make her comment.
Good evening. My name is Claudia Lenhoff, and I'm the executive director of Champaign County Healthcare Consumers. And I just wanted to give a little bit of a good news update and then provide a little information about housing and homelessness related stuff. The good news update is that one of our staff members who works on the disability team is an attorney now, and he was able to passed the bar while he was working with us. And so now we have an in-house person who can take a disability case all the way to the administrative law judge level, which is usually the last stop in a disability application process. And he has just gotten two approvals from his two administrative law judge hearing cases. So that's something we're really excited about. We don't have to always outsource those cases now. The second thing that I wanted to mention, and I don't know if Lynn or other people will talk about this, but there's a big effort to work to end homelessness in our community. And so a lot of organizations are participating in that. One of the things that I wanted to mention regarding that is that one of the big problems that exists is affordable housing. And I just wanted to speak very specifically to people who receive SSI as their form of disability benefits. There's two programs, SSDI and SSI. SSI is for the people who don't have enough in SSDI or enough work credits. So it's really for the lower income folks. And SSI in 2026 pays $994 a month. And if housing is supposed to only be 30% of your income, so rent plus utilities, that's sort of the gold standard of what it should be. There's no housing like that in our community. There's, you know, without a voucher, and there are no vouchers right now. So people can go up to maybe 50% of their income and maybe get by. But even then, we're still talking about $500 rent plus utilities. And this is part of the reason that we have such a bottleneck in getting people housed who have been homeless. We work with people who are homeless, and we deliver to them the same services we do to the general community, including helping them get disability benefits. And that should be sort of a passport to housing and to stability and all that. But so I just wanted to explain why it is not, and why there are so many homeless individuals who do actually have incomes, but there's, you know, there are all these barriers. The last thing that I wanted to mention in the process that we are working with to end homelessness is that I would really love to see our community take a sort of public health model approach to it, with looking at primary prevention, secondary prevention, and tertiary prevention to not just address homelessness, but also the factors that can then lead to homelessness. And hopefully we can make things better in this community, but that'll take the entire, you know, everybody who's involved working on that. But anyway, I just wanted to provide those updates, and thank you all for everything you do and the support for our organization.
Thank you very much for your comments. Is there anyone else online or in person who would like to make public comments? Please come forward. Can you press the mic?
Yeah, okay. Is that, yeah. I'm James Kilgore from First Followers. Obviously, we are grateful to the Mental Health Board for all the support that you've given us over the years. I didn't really intend to speak, but I have to just echo what Claudia is saying about housing. I mean, we address primarily a constituency of people coming home from prison, and their housing situation is just abysmal at the moment. I mean, there's not only do they have income problems, but then they have the problems of criminal background, which a lot of landlords don't want to rent to them. And I think we need to look at the landlords and the legislation in this community. I mean, we're increasingly getting landlords who are not from here, who may have never even seen the buildings that they're renting. And I mean, we're finding, you know, people are living in just incredibly horrible conditions, and you call somebody and you get somebody in Brooklyn, and you're expecting them to get a response. So I think, I mean, I know there's efforts in the community to bring together all these service providers that do assist people that are dealing with housing and the unhoused population, but I'm just echoing what Claudia says, and I hope that you'll put that into your conversation and into your thoughts. I mean, I'm sure it is already, but just want to emphasize it a little bit more. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your comment. Is there anyone else in person or online who would like to give public comment right now? No one online, no one else in person, so we will move on, but there will be opportunity to give public comment later in the meeting as well. So we will next move to my favorite item of other business, closed session. The board may move to enter into closed session for semi-annual closed session minutes review pursuant to 5 ILCS 120/2C21. The following individuals will join this closed session if we choose to do so: members of the Champaign County Mental Health Board and Executive Director Canfield. If this motion is approved, those authorized will meet in the Putman Room and move for roll call and discussion. When the discussion ends, they will return to the Shields-Carter Room, and the board will call for a motion to return to open session with a new roll call. And once it's reestablished, we may take possible actions, which we will discuss in the closed session. So I'm going to go ahead and just make the motion to make it easier on everyone. And then if someone else would second, I will move to for the board to enter into closed session for semi-annual closed session minutes review pursuant to 5 ILCS 120/2C21. With the following individuals joining the closed session: members of the Champaign County Mental Health Board and Executive Director Canfield. Would anyone like to second?
I second.
Thank you very much. McClay moves, Nichols seconds. Any discussion? All right, seeing none, the motion has been clearly stated. May I have a roll call?
Jen Ares.
Here.
Alejandro Gomez.
Here.
Tony Nichols?
Here.
Elaine Palencia?
Yes.
Kyle Patterson?
Yes.
Jane Sprandel?
Yes.
John Paul Joachim?
Abstain.
Molly McClay?
Yes. All right, with that, the motion to move into closed session passes. So we will continue the open session recording, and all members of the board and Lynn Canfield will move to the Putman Room, where further instructions will be given.
With reviewing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you guys and tax preparers, this is like your busy time of year.
Right.
Yeah.
I
know. Yeah. Yes, he is so stellar. He's just amazing. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. He had to travel for one, and then I think one was done remotely. And it's one of them is his client. He's been our client since like 2018. He stays in the hotel. He'll go to Hope Village when it opens.
Remind me, where is Hope Village?
So it's going to, do you know where Carver Drive is?
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. So it's at the, Carver Drive used to dead end at an agricultural field.
Okay.
So it's where the agricultural field used to be.
Gotcha.
Yeah, and it should open later this fall. Originally, we were looking at spring, but, construction's still going, and we've been funding the construction as we get money. And so, it'll take that long to open. But that's where he will go. And but now he has some money, and it's actually an individual who, understand this, like
He's a type 1 diabetic, and he has a horrific seizure disorder. And so, like, you know.
Very medically fragile.
Yeah, like, very fragile.
Very healthy, yeah.
Right, yeah. My mom used to have a seizure disorder, not as bad as his, but pretty bad. And one of the things that we learned is that, like, anything can lower the threshold for seizures.
You get sick, you get a fever, you're
yeah.
exhausted, you're tired.
Yeah, your blood sugar tanks. Your blood sugar goes high. Yeah. Yeah. I feel so sad for him. It's
constant. Yeah.
When
you're sick, your sugars are not stable.
Right.
More, like,
yeah. Yeah. He very frequently has, like, injuries to his head and face from his seizures. And, yeah, so I can't wait till he can get there and actually have a kitchen and have a little more control over. And and we've had to, so we check on him all the time. And I'll just tell you this one thing and then I'll go. One day we found him, he was really sick, and his blood sugar was like close to 600. Yeah, and he was resisting it because he wasn't in his right mind. It's like, nope, you gotta go. So
all they say, I've been doing.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. He was in bed, and he was like shaking. It was terrible. So anyway, thank you for your sympathy.
All right, that was quick. I'll work on it.
All right.
We are back.
All right, so we are back. It is 6:06 p.m. on March 18th, 2026. I will move for the Champaign County Mental Health Board to return to open session. Can I have a second?
Second.
All right, McClay moves, Palencia seconds. May I have a roll call?
Jen Arras.
Yes.
Alejandro Gomez.
Here.
Tony Nichols.
Yes.
Elaine Palencia.
Yes.
Kyle Patterson.
Yes.
Jane Sprandel.
Yes.
John Paul Joachim.
Yes.
Molly McClay.
Yes. All right. Open session has resumed. So I will also move to accept the February 19th, 2020, February 26th, 2020, July 21st, 2021, March 20th, 2024, September 18th, 2024, February 19th, 2025, and October 22nd, 2025, closed session minutes as presented and open them. May I have a second?
Second.
All right, McClay moves, Palencia second. We cannot have any discussion, so since the motion has been clearly stated, I will have a roll call.
Alejandro Gomez.
Here.
I think I need a yes or a no.
Yes.
Tony Nichols.
Yes.
Elaine Palencia.
Yes.
Kyle Patterson.
Yes.
Jane Sprandel.
Yes.
John Paul Joachim.
Yes.
Dan Arras.
Yes.
Molly McClay.
Yes. With that, the motion regarding the closed minutes, session minutes passes. And we will now move on to chairperson's comments. I am Molly McClay, the chair of the Champaign County Mental Health Board. I will have other comments in the meeting, but something I wanted to note that was very cool is, so back in fall 2024, Executive Director Canfield and I went to Sangamon County to the Massey Commission to discuss their interest in starting a mental health board for Sangamon County. And I am happy to report that per election results last evening, the referendum to start a mental health board in that county did pass. So we are very excited to hear that our neighboring county, which is the county where I grew up, will be starting their own mental health board and funding that. So that is all of my comments for the evening, for now. So next, I will move to Executive Director Lynn Canfield's comments.
I wasn't even going to comment on that, but you're right. And the fun actually just starts, because now they're going to ask us for samples of everything. And I'm going to keep doing what I've been doing all along and saying, your county is different from our county. You can look at our samples, but don't do what we're doing. Find out what your people want to do. So this is, it's still exciting that they have the resources now and they can start doing that. And that reminds me that we're very lucky to have this. And we may have to make really tough decisions this year because there are so many applications for funding, and so many of them, we'll talk about this a little bit later, so many of them are well done and worthy, but we don't have enough money. So I don't want to get too dark today, because it really is nice to be able to do this at all. So then there was just another fun election thing that a friend of mine won her primary race. It's in the Chicago area. And she's a person that I know from NACO, and I always get behind her policy proposals because they're about maternal health and infant mortality and health equity, and they're good. It's good stuff. So I was happy to see her win. And I think, I don't know, there's so many comments I could make, but I think I would like to just let you get on with the business, and then I'll just, if there's anything in here that needs to be explained, obviously I'll talk.
Okay. Lynn, I realize I did not introduce our new member,
yeah,
so can you?
Yeah, okay, we have a new board member, and I think you might be able to introduce yourself just as well as I could do it. Is that okay?
You know, I'll give it a try. I'm Den Arez. I'm currently appointed on the county board for District 6. Happy to be here. I've always been interested in mental health and mental health awareness. So everyone that knows me says this is perfect for you. So I'm glad to be here and joining you all great people. So
we're glad to have you. Thank you. Yes.
Okay, now that I forgot about comments, I was going to go to the county board meeting tomorrow night, but it has been moved out 1 week, and I was going to go for just one reason, and that was to acknowledge Leon Bryson for 5 years of service. It's five, right? Yes.
Yay.
And he met that milestone on Monday, a very exciting day for us. So I won't be able to go to the county board meeting because it's the same day as the conference. So I don't know. I might send notes for other people to read about you. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Anyway. Awesome. All right. Well, we will next move on to approval of CCMHB board meeting minutes. These are on pages 23 through 26 of the packet. An action is requested to approve the minutes of the CCMHB February 18th, 2026 meeting. I did notice there's an inconsistency in the minutes, so we will need to amend them. But there is a staff member of the Youth Assessment Center at the RPC, and their last name is spelled in two different ways in the minutes. So on page 23 and 26, so I'm trying to determine the correct spelling. Does anybody know what the correct spelling of this person's name might be? No, Alyssa or Alyssa? It's Ransom, not random. Yeah, I meant to tell you that before. So, we will amend on page 23 to Ransom as the last name. Are there any other edits that we need to make to the minutes?
If there are no other changes needed, I make a motion to approve the minutes of February 18th, 2026 with said edit.
Thank you. May I have a second?
A second.
All right, Sprandel motions, Nichols seconds. Any final discussion? All right, seeing none, all those in favor of approving the February 18th, 2026 minutes as edited, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, same sign. The ayes have it. The amended minutes are approved. Next.
I think that's probably another one of those where autocorrect was not your friend. Because I could see how it would be like, oh, she meant to write random. And you know, that happens to me all the time.
Yes, they're both words that are in the dictionary. So autocorrect pulled them up. All right. So next we'll move to the vendor invoice lists. These are on pages 27 through 29 of the packet. Action is requested to accept the vendor invoice list and place them on file. Is there any discussion or would anyone like to make a motion?
I'll make a motion to approve the vendor invoice list.
Thank you. May I have a second?
Make a second.
Whoops. Joachim moves. Nichols seconds. Any final discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of accepting the vendor invoice list and placing them on file, say aye. All those opposed, same sign. The ayes have it. The vendor invoice lists are accepted and placed on file. So next we will move to old business. The first item of old business is the request for program year 2027 funding. And there is a list of these requests, although there will be updates given on this list. This is on page 31, which I am desperately trying to find in my packet because I forgot my computer tonight. So a list of program year 2027 funding requests as of March 6th is included. An oral update will be provided on any that were submitted during the second NOFA period on March 16th. No action is needed, but we should have a discussion. So I will start with Lynn, if you want to share some info about this.
Yes, I do. So there were three successful applications and a beautiful story that I would like to share about one that didn't get submitted, if there's time. So when we look at this, I had at the bottom the amounts of what is available to allocate listed as TBD. So since putting this together, since our first set of applications, I've gotten a little bit of budget advice. It's a very little bit. So with this kind of soft expectation about revenue increase for next year, it's the lowest levy increase that we've seen in a long time. I knew that we would already be pretty far below what was requested. So the new ones, I'm going to stop sharing because I can tell you what the new ones are. I have been working on this like a lot. And just kept doing the math over and over again. And I made Chris Wilson do it with me too, like just hoping to find a really big mistake so that we could improve what appears to be affordable. But so far, that's not happening. So what I've got now, I can tell you the new applications are from an organization called Brightpoint, which is currently providing services in Champaign County under a U.S. Department of Justice Office of Violence Against Women Act grant, which will end September 30th. So the request is for $217,106, and it would kick in when they lose the federal funding. That was the idea. The second one we got was City of Champaign Township Strides Shelter. The request is for $150,000 for a behavioral health program. And I haven't read that one yet, but I, you know, started working on it today and got distracted by looking at the math again and trying to find more money. And then Courage Connection was one that we were expecting to see apply. And they told us last month that the amount would be this, and it is, as they said, $176,476. So that adds to the total. So now the total amounts requested are $5,220,000. 939. But what we have appear to have available to allocate is $3,245,055. And what I did is I took what the total of all the allocations will be for the period of July 1 to next June 30th, and I took out the two-year contracts, and the next time you see this tier sheet, the two-year contracts will be removed from it. But I still think that's good information for you to have, because you know that your priority areas are being addressed by contracts that don't have to be reevaluated right now. So it's good background information, but really foreground, you need to be able to see what's new and what has to be reviewed now. So I'm trying, you know, I spent some time today trying to find a good way to present that information. I really haven't got it yet, but it also has to be ADA compliant. So I'm, you know, two fronts, like, is it readable? Is it only the information you need and nothing else? And is it compliant so that I can post it online? So the difference between what appears to be affordable and the total request is $1,975,884, which is the biggest gap that I think I've seen, in years at least. Some of y'all have been doing this a long time, and you may remember a year that we were close to that, but I've blocked it. I kind of got used to our biggest problem is that the agencies have great ideas and they have identified a need, but they're having trouble finding staff, or they have trouble with business office needs. Like, that's what we've been focused on for so many years that I forgot. Sometimes you just don't have enough money to do all the right things. And this is also something we expected because of changes in federal funding and policy that are either slowing down grants that agencies and we have come to rely on for many years, or stopping them, or threatening to stop them. And when I was at the conference in February, while she was talking, my colleague from Minnesota, she was presenting to us, colleague from Minnesota, got a text about it's not the moratorium, it's just stopping paying Medicaid because of fraud. So anyway, it was just like, this is how everybody's finding out about what they can do with funding, is watching the news. And so I think given that highly uncertain environment, agencies did the right thing to submit proposals to fill gaps that are just growing. So this is just a very different condition than what I'm used to, and our process might not support it as well as it has done in the past. So I think I'm going to need some guidance from the board on what we as staff need to do to make this possible this year. So you don't have to give me that guidance today, but I think we just need some direction. What is going to be, and we can keep talking about this later. But anyway, so that's a big gap. Can I tell the happy story?
Sure.
There's an application that it wasn't done. I was watching it until midnight, and at midnight it had to cut off. The system just automatically cuts off. But I really appreciated what they were doing, and I want you guys to know about it because I don't see this kind of thing happen very often, and I really want to acknowledge how wonderful it was. Two executive directors of two different agencies got together, and they were going to submit a plan so that one of them would administer all of the funding and do all of the reporting. Don Moyer did that for three agencies for many years. So it was an arrangement like that. And it was like, what I liked was, like, these directors trust each other enough to do that. Like, from both directions, there needs to be a really high degree of trust and confidence. And the plan would address needs that we talk about all the time. So it would be a very nice one for y'all to see. I was kind of sad that they didn't make the deadline, but I'm also, you know, kind of not sad because we don't have enough money to do everything. But it was really cool to watch them work on it. And I think you should know that despite the rumors of no collaboration in this community, there's lots of collaboration. It's not even possible to do all the collaboration that's needed, but there are really great efforts. And then this one, there's even, like, real partnerships. I just wanted you to know that. So, okay.
Thank you so much, Lynn. I did want to give one a little bit of a preview of what is coming in the next meetings and study sessions from our typical process, and then give us an opportunity to talk about how we might need to make changes or give further guidance to the staff as they prepare their program summaries. In April, typically for those who are new to this process or for those who just want a refresher, we will have a meeting and study session on April 22nd and 29th. And at those meetings and study sessions, typically the board has gone through each of the applications received, unless there has been a particular reason to delay or defer discussion of an application, which we have done in the past for certain circumstances. We've gone through each one, and each application has been assigned two board reviewers. We've done it different ways in prior years. I was hoping to have reviewers, like the reviewer list made for this meeting, but since we are possibly in the process of having our board vacancy appointed prior to April, potentially, I did not want to make those assignments in case we do have another member, because otherwise that means we're all going to have to do more work if a new member joins. Then they will get to jump right in. So, I did, inquire with each board member if you have any specific preferences on types of applications or anything about the review process, to please let us know, Lynn and myself. And then once we get to May, there will be a meeting where Lynn and the staff will present us with possible allocation scenarios. And then at the final May meeting, we will vote on those scenarios and vote on the funding. So as Lynn mentioned, we have a very large gap between what we have available to give and what has been requested of us. And that gap has widened because of the second application period that we created by $600,000-ish dollars. So went from $1.3 million gap to $1.9 million gap. I did the math, and that essentially we will not be able to fund 36.5% of what has been requested of us. That's more than a third, and I think it's easy to use the word cut. It's not a cut. These are things that have been requested of us, and we will not be able to grant all of those requests. And at least in this is my fifth funding cycle that I'll be on the board, this is definitely by far the biggest shortfall that we have had. So this is going to be a hard application season, and I don't want to just be sad and gloomy. But it does mean that we're going to have to make some hard decisions, and we're not going to be able to fund everything. And so I think, as Lynn mentioned, the staff and all of us, I think, need guidance from each other on what criteria we are going to use to determine which applications get funded, which do not. If an application gets partially funded, why, and things like that. And we have minimum requirements that we have honestly not been enforcing. There are other mechanisms that will be provided in the program summaries that can help us make the decision, but I think we need to just have at least brief, for now, honest conversation about how we're going to do this. So I wanted to open it up to you all to share your thoughts on what criteria should we use to determine what gets funded this year. Yes, it's a question. I didn't inflect in a way that made it a question. Sure.
So there is the priorities memo that we worked on in the fall and that was approved in November. That's a good place to start, but it really is kind of like everything but the kitchen sink, or is that the saying? Like, there are lots of factors that you could use that are already in there. So, it's just kind of like, what's the best thing to pull out from that, or things? So anyway, it's expansive because this fund is actually really good at filling gaps. And so, you know, we kind of don't know where the gaps are going to be. So we kind of want to cover everything. But anyway.
So I would entertain discussion from the board on this topic.
Well, just to state it, I know the other time that I remember when there was such a shortfall, the idea came up that we would just fund, like, you know, you gave 36.5% as the gap, you know, but just have the same percentage of each application funded. And I don't think we did that, but it had, you know, we thought about it. It was up there. It was stated. So I'm just stating it as a possibility. So that everybody gets it, of the ones we decide need to be funded or that we want to fund, then you just do the same percentage for each application.
All right. Thank you for sharing that. I do think there was one year when I was on the board where, like, it was about like maybe 90% of the requests from like most agencies was funded. Is that ringing a bell to anyone?
Yeah, but then it seems like the money changed by the time we did it. You know, there was more money, you know, so it wasn't quite what we started out to do. But that's, I may be remembering wrong.
Thank you. Other thoughts? Dan, I saw your...
Yeah, I guess I wanted to start the discussion as someone who is not well-versed in being on the board yet, right? Kind of like a baby coming out. I guess my question is, could it be that since we have to be so strict with the money that we get a little bit stricter with the contracts? And this is obviously a horrible idea, but I just want to bring it up as a possibility to kind of consider, and I felt like that might open up some discussion that might be helpful too. So, strictness. Let's go with that.
Could you share more, a little more, if you want to, about what strict, I guess, strict in what way with the contracts?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, basically, based off of the contracts that everyone has, if someone is not meeting every single thing, can they get a smaller percentage, or can it be a little bit more dispersed among others that are, you know, already adhering to every single part of their contract? I don't want to take anything away, that's for sure. But can it be dispersed a little bit more fairly in that sense? So.
Thank you for sharing that. That's definitely a point to consider. Other thoughts from the board?
So I think from my perspective, there's a few things that I'll be looking at. So one is obviously the gaps that Lynn was talking about. It can be hard to know what gaps there are in the community. Obviously, we rely on what agencies are telling us of what needs are out there. Obviously, we all have our own fields that we work in and experiences and connections to our community. So we kind of know some of the gaps from our experiences. I think the other part is also reliability and performance and track record of agencies and whether the money is going to be used in a way that we know is beneficial, is going to be, have a high rate of return of our investment in the program, what its goals are, the likelihood of meeting those goals, and then making sure we are reaching vulnerable parts of the community, minorities in the community that may not be reached through other means. I know different subtopics in the past have been rural outreach and making sure that those people have services. I know Black constituents in the community have had a hard time with mental health access, not wanting to go to certain places. And even though we fund certain places with a lot of funding, there are still issues with having people feel comfortable going to them. And so making sure that when we do the application process that we are discussing that sensitive topic and making sure that that is being addressed. Otherwise, finding an agency that will be open and proactive in addressing that need in the community. And then just kind of looking at two ways we are funding programs in. One is growing the future of, you know, the community and helping the community thrive and doing well for, you know, 10, 20 years from now, versus putting out fires and preventing and helping people in crisis right now and making sure we are hopefully funding both. So that's how I'd be looking at how I'm funding the agencies.
Thank you. Any other comments from board members?
I apologize. My thoughts are not well gathered here. I think, Elaine, you kind of were talking about, like, the flat cuts of, you know, everyone's going to be cut 20%. I'm glad we're having this conversation because I'm not sure if I always agree with that. Yeah, but it's an option, yes. And so I'm so glad that Molly has opened this up so we can, like, brainstorm, because we have kind of a big hill to climb, and so we're going to have to do that together. So I'm kind of iffy about that one, too, so I'm glad that you're also iffy. I've kind of done a little messaging with Lynn and Molly. I think this round we have to be extra critical. We have to be extra invested in our volunteerism, because none of us are paid to do this, you know. And so I have told Molly I will dive in harder if I need to, you know, pick up the slack, because, you know, like, we did have a missing seat. Denise, you're new, so I don't expect you to get a full roster and be like, get it done, you know. So I'm willing to kind of step up, but I think we're going to have to all be like, okay, I'm going to have to spend an extra hour looking at these or whatever. Some things that, and I know that John has said these, I think we need to also look at, you know, when I look at them and look at, you know, what other funding are they getting? What else are they applying for? You know, other agencies filling the gap. But you're right. We don't always know that. We just assume, you know, so it's we're doing this without a great roadmap. And so we're just going to have to rely on each other to ask those hard questions. And maybe one of us will know the answer, or we can ask our staff to be like, hey, can you explain this to us? And I want to say Lynn had suggested maybe when we do the conversations, maybe we don't always have the agencies here and we just write down all those questions and then we can outsource them out. And then maybe I thought...
No, I think there might have been a year where it ended up being like that. This is a long time ago, but there just wasn't time.
Maybe a COVID year, though. Maybe that was COVID.
Maybe. It was just wasn't time to do the questions, so they were done in writing. This time, when you have that conversation on April 29, I have literally less than 1 week to create the first draft of affordable scenarios. So there's not really a lot of time to send questions to the agencies and get them back and make sure you see the answers and then tell me your reaction. So what we've done in the last few years that's been good is you've been able to ask and get answers fast. Yeah. But there were years it wasn't easy. So that's
and maybe an idea,
like, in advance of the April
meetings. Maybe as we're evaluating them ourselves to discuss, if we have a question, maybe that's something we can say. Hey, you know, Lynn, Leon, do you know the answers? If not, can you dig a little more information so when we do come to share it with the rest of the board, we kind of have that background? So that might be an idea. I think Molly in our conversations talked about, you know, maybe we need to really, when we review these, be like, why do I feel like we should fund this? And why shouldn't we? I mean, maybe ideally we're not going to be able to fund everything. We're not going to definitely be able to fund everything at the level they've requested. So we need to kind of be like, okay, if I were to say no to this, I would say no because such and such agency offers the same services or blah, blah, blah. So, and I loved John's growing the future versus always being and fixing the crisis. So thank you for letting me ramble on, but this is going to be tough and we're going to have to rely on each other, even if, you know, we're not co-readers. I think there might be times where we have to reach out to individuals and be like, hey, Elaine, what do you know about this agency? I know that you go to Community Coalition. You know, maybe we're just going to have to rely on each other a little bit more. So thank you.
Thank you. I wanted to jump onto that a little bit with some additional ideas for consideration. One thing that I know that gets discussed, and I think this board has discussed before, is sustaining current programs versus we have received applications from a lot of new programs that we have never funded before, and we could take a hard line of, you know, our priority is first to evaluate the programs that we currently fund and determine if we can sustain that funding before we move to fund any new programs. That is one metric we could use. It might not be what we decide to use, but it's something to consider. I know there's also, you know, we've had some questions in the past, and I think this is going to come up this year, of like agencies that are not headquartered in Champaign. You know, do we know that they have a, you know, board member that's here, an office that's here? Is that going to be a criteria that we use? And I think to add on to that, we have minimum criteria that we have allowed to slide in prior years when we did not have this crunch. And I know a lot of funding entities, that first round is looking at, do you meet the minimum requirements? If you don't meet the minimum requirements, you're out now. And we only are left to evaluate those that do meet the minimum requirements. And I know that that's not really what anybody wants to do, but if we are looking at having to not being able to fund over a third of the requested amount, we may need to take an approach. We may need to consider taking an approach like that, as painful as it is, because there's no way around it. Like, this is going to be hard. And so what kind of hard do we want it to be? I guess the other piece would be, you know, we're supposed to fund what's best interest in the best interest of the county. How do we even determine what that means, and what programs are in the best interest and what are not as much in the best interest? But those are all some things. The other being, you know, application quality. We could look, take a deep dive at outcomes. Are these outcomes really measuring like important things for these services? How much of a reach do these programs have? Things like that are all things that we could consider in our conversations. Any other thoughts from the board on this?
Well, we could also look at the community survey and see if that'd be a place to look for gaps, and if something is funding, something mentioned there, could look at that whole thing.
Thank you. Does anyone else have anything they want to share?
Exactly on that note that Elaine mentioned, and also that John mentioned, it kind of goes together with what are the ones that are meeting the goals of bridging the gaps, right, of the needs in the county. And one of the best ways to do that is, honestly, with data analytics and research that's already been done, right, on what the county needs. And we can maybe we can also survey what all of these organizations provide, where the biggest gap, as was mentioned in public comment, is housing. And honestly, the most basic needs, when we don't have those basic needs, we can't meet other needs like our mental health. And so I know there's orgs that, you know, the county that we, that mental health board funds, that definitely provide even the basic needs as they're helping, you know, as they're bridging those gaps. So if we could do like a survey on that, on which ones are providing the needs that have already come out in surveys and that Elaine is suggesting that are done as well, you know, how can we continue to fund those right now when we most desperately need them? So would be nice.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who would like to share comments? All right. Seeing none, we can move on, and we will have plenty of time to discuss these items in April and May. So we will next. Oh, Lynn, did you want to add something? Okay.
Like, if you have thoughts about it after this meeting, please do share them with me. There's so many ways you could take the current priorities memo. It does reference the community needs assessment and goes a little bit further because we needed to know more about mental health than that document was really doing. So there's a lot of stuff in there. But anyway, thank you for the ideas right now. Okay.
Yes, thank you very much for the ideas. So we will next move on to the next item of old business, which is agency audit review. Audit and review updates. This memo is presented on pages 33 through 36 of the packet. A decision memorandum offers an updates on delayed program year 2025 audits and reviews and related. Our action is requested. And the potential motions that we might utilize are on pages 35 through 36. So, to be honest, right now is an opportunity to make a determination about if, with audits, financial reviews, audited balance sheet, or equivalent being a minimum requirement of applications and something that is needed to sustain agency contracts, we could make a determination right now that any agency that has not met that minimum requirement would not be considered for PY 2027 funding. So that is one of the motions to consider this evening. That is an option. So I wanted to have Lynn explain the updates from agencies, both current contracted agencies and those who have applied for PY 2027 funding, and what the audit-related updates are. This is the last voting items of the evening.
The rest of the stuff is actually kind of fun, so I hope that you still have energy for it when we get there. Then there are snacks in case that helps with the energy. The memo is a lot shorter than the similar version that you've seen of it. It's also ADA compliant. Yay. But some of the things I did to make it compliant make it less pretty, and we'll get there, I promise. So we have the update on funding for this year is that the audits were due, like there's one that's not due until June 30th, but everything else was due December 31st. We've talked a couple times already about the ones that were delayed. So this just updates you a little bit. The ones that we didn't have last time we talked were Uniting Pride's review. We did receive that in February. We have finished looking at it. Everything is fine. We might have asked for additional information, but it's all done. The Refugee Center, we got that. We have one big question. They're still working on it. It's the same question that we ask every year. So I expect a similar answer, but that case is not closed until I get, the official answer. But I think that's looking good. So we can say that the Refugee Center audit is done and submitted, and for our purposes of moving forward, it's just a question that I'm waiting for. Women in Need Recovery sent their audit March 2nd. We did need some extra information from them because it wasn't presented according to the contract. So they did that very quickly. And then we had more questions because now that it was presented quickly, some things popped out. They've answered all those questions as of, I think, yesterday. That's settled. I think Chris Wilson might still be looking at that one, but I'm done looking at it. So we'll see. He may have something else to tell us. We talked to the GCAP executive director, who was very confident that it would be done by March 31st. That's the end of the grace period. If we don't have the audit by March 31st, you have to consider whether to cancel the contracts. And you also, if you don't cancel... Yeah, and you might have to make like sort of a less critical to us decision about what do we do about payments that have been held when you cancel a contract. So do we release them? Do we wait until there is an audit? That type of thing. But we're not to March 31st yet, so they think they'll have it to us by then, and they are not requesting a waiver of the payment suspension, and in fact asked if we could maybe adjust the contract downward because they had a long period of a vacancy for which they will owe money back, and they'd rather not receive it in the first place. So we'll work on that. We stopped talking to them about it because the director needed to take a medical leave briefly here, so we're just happy that she asked that last question and hopeful that we will get the it's actually a review, not an audit. Okay. And then the last one is First Followers. I think that we have folks here from First Followers, but we don't know when their audit will be done. We did ask, and the first response was that they were happy to say it was going to be done earlier than it was last year. So we are coming towards March 31st, don't know what to do about that one. So that's the whole thing about current year funding. But then the second question is about the funding that you're about to consider and make decisions about, and that actually does include the fate of two-year contracts. Since the Refugee Center and Women in Need Recovery both have two-year contracts, and we didn't know earlier in the year what was going to happen with those audits, but those are done, there's no problem. So but they didn't have those audits by the application deadline. So if you wanted to say that mattered, you could say that for everybody who didn't have those proofs by February 2nd. Other currently funded agencies that didn't have audits at the time of application were First Followers, GCAP, Uniting Pride, and Women in Need Recovery, and all of them submitted applications for consideration. And then there are new applicants. Family First Advocacy, they still don't have an audit. They are working on an audit balance sheet, which is in the instructions. It says we will accept that. So they're working on that, but that isn't free, so it's taking a little time. Habitat for Humanity shared their audit. That's done. TASC shared their last year audit, and they said they expect 2025 audit by the end of March. We Never Walk Alone does not have an audit, but they already provided the balance sheet. So the only ones that we're waiting for now are Family First Advocacy and TASC. And then of the new applications, Courage Connection audit was done. City of Champaign Township has provided those documents. I just filed them. I was just happy to see them. And Chris is actually looking at them. Yay, Chris. And then Bright Point provided a PY24 audit, and they think their 25 audit will be done by the end of March, but we don't have it. So that one, so there's just a few there that don't have an audit right now. So the list here was Family First Advocacy, First Followers, GCAP, and TASC, and you would add Bright Point to it. So then you can consider, what do you do? Do you want to do anything right now about an application that doesn't have an audit to support it? Do you want to wait and make that, like, you're not going to review those till you have the audit, but we staff could continue our process. It is my preference for us to just do our stuff, just have it ready, because sometimes those audits just show up. And they're good, and there's no follow-up, and we can't make you wait any longer either. So anyway, that's a lot. I'm sorry. I didn't practice.
That's okay. So we have some possible actions to take. So I want to start with the currently contracted programs whose audits or financial reviews are not in yet, and that would be GCAP and First Followers. GCAP has stated to Lynn and has given us updates throughout the process that they expect to be done by March 31st. We could decide to take an action tonight to determine what would happen to their contract if it is not in by then. But I thought, given our prior conversations, that we would want to wait until April, and if it's not in by then, take an action. Of course, if any board members would like to take an action tonight, we can. With First Followers, we did not get a lot of communication from them. And unfortunately, First Followers has been late. I believe every year they've been funded with their audit. So in this February memo about this issue, there was a listing of when the audits came in. But Lynn, would you be willing to share? I know I wrote it down too, but I think if you could share.
I just closed that document.
Okay, I'll go ahead and share it.
I had too much stuff open on the screen.
So the program year 2021 audit came in on March 9th, 2022. The program year 2022 audit came in on March 21st, 2023. Program year 2023 audit came on May 3rd, 2024. The program year 2024 audit came on April 23rd, 2025. And the program year 2025 audit is not in. To be honest, the trend has been getting later, not earlier. So again, the end of the grace period is March 31st. And at that point, we would determine if we're going to cancel the contract or not. There was a time in a year and a half ago when an agency who had been late for many years with their audits, we brought this item to our meeting prior to the end of the grace period and voted on it to give the agency time to determine if they could get the audit in on time. So that was with Promise Healthcare. We determined that we would cancel their contract if it wasn't in by the end of the grace period. We voted on it, and then they got it in by the end of the grace period. And if we were to take such an action tonight, I would hope the same would happen. But with this being the fifth year in a row late, I am concerned about this agency's, going forward, especially if we are needing to look more and more at making sure minimum requirements are followed. I'm not sure why the audit's not here, and we have not heard that. So we do have possible actions to either continue the contract, even if the audit isn't in by the grace period, and or to cancel the contract if it is not in by the end of the grace period. And I wanted to entertain discussion on this item.
Are we able to question representative from that agency as the status at this time?
We certainly can.
Mr. Kilgore, are you still here?
No.
Okay. Please come forward and we can have Jane ask her question.
Good evening.
Thank you. I guess I could have asked for you too. I'm sorry. But anyway, and I know that our packet was made a week ago or whatever. So what is the current status of the 2025 audit?
So there's a couple things. Excuse me, I'm a little hoarse. But there's a couple things. Just spoke with the auditor on Monday. One of the things that's happening is that we contract out with a local CPA, and she's traveling. She's been gone, and she won't be back until I think next week. So that's kind of hindered us. But speaking to the actual auditor on Monday, there's four action items that are open, right? Four action items that are open that only she can answer. And unfortunately, she's overseas right now. But she's very aware that there's a time limit on this on the deadline. And so just looking back how we've done it in the past, this happens to be something a little different. But just looking back, the conversation that we've had before she left is that she feels confident that she'll have it completed. An auditor, when I spoke to them on Monday, they said, well, we got four action items remaining, and once she gets back, she should be able to take care of those. Now, she has emailed me earlier this morning some of the things that I can answer, so I have to reach out with a phone call tomorrow with the auditor. So that's kind of the status update. But just to provide you some context on just historically about our audit being late is that one of the things that, we've grown really, really fast over, and especially during the pandemic, so we've gotten a lot more money. And so over the past 2 years, last year and the year before, is that we've gone into the realm of a single audit. And if anybody knows anything about a single audit, that's the federal audit that you have to, if you're if your organization has expenses that exceed $750,000, you got to go through a much more scrutinized process with the federal government. And so that's why you've seen the uptick of, okay, we may not get it in March, then it's like April and May. It's because of that particular situation. And then there was some conversation maybe about a year or two ago of us finding another auditor that could kind of expedite things. That was very, very expensive. And then, you know, that's kind of setting a reset button on all the things that we've learned and all the things that we've done with this particular auditor. And so we've been kind of in a, okay, do we, don't we, do we, don't we? But by no means is it not the fact that we don't want to get it in early and that we cannot do the work, but it's just one of those things that, you know, just internal capacity and us growing as an organization has really caused us to kind of, you know, not meet these particular deadlines.
Well, I appreciate you recapping a couple of that because I do remember the change in audit needs when you grew. So I appreciate your refreshing my memory on that. And again, I tend to be the one who's kind of like, no, no, no. But again, it goes back to, you know, where do we draw the line, you know, da, da, da. And it's unfortunate your CPA went traveling before they finished, but I guess we all get vacations. So, but thank you for at least answering my question, and I'll turn it over to any other board member who might have a question.
I wanted to follow up on part of what you said. So you, I don't remember the exact words you used, but you mentioned that the auditor was working to get it in. Do you suspect it will be in by March 31st?
I suspect we can get it done by March 31st.
Okay, because that is the end of the grace period. So that's what we're determining tonight is if it's not in and by then, what we would do about the contract. My other question is, because you are the only agency remaining who has not turned in their audit, who has not been providing regular updates to the staff on that, why have you not been providing updates, and what might you do differently in the future to better keep the staff informed?
I think it's just a thing about communication. We did receive the letter and, you know, been through this process before. It said March 31st, right? And so we fully understand that that's totally on us for not reaching back out once we received the letter, saying that we did receive the letter. So that's totally on us. But, you know, we understand that it's a difficult time. We fully understand that, you know, Champaign County, the needs are growing. We also understand that there's limitations within, you know, the budget, right? So just moving forward, I mean, like I said, we've grown tremendously, and we sometimes struggle with our administrative capacity, but at no time or no means does that mean, you know, from a professional standpoint, that we do not understand where the board is coming from.
Thank you very much. Are there any other questions from board members? All right, seeing none, thank you very much for your comments.
All right, thank you.
So we have heard from agency representatives. The possible actions are to either continue the contracts, even if not in by March 31st, to cancel the contracts, or if they're not in by March 31st, just to be clear, that would not be canceling anything until after March 31st, or we could create another motion such as to defer this decision. So what would board members like to do?
Hey, I have a question. So there's apparently two motions we can choose from for the first follower's question. And I was wondering, you said the cancel is only if they don't turn it in by March 31st, or is that a cancel for sure? I guess
It would be, and when we took a similar kind of motion for this in the past, it would be that if the audit is not in by that end of that grace period, March 31st, that the contract would be canceled at that point.
And that doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, if it is turned in before that, that it's canceled. It would just be only if it's by then.
Correct. And when this happened in September 2024 with Promise Healthcare, they did turn it in by the deadline, and so the contract was not canceled. And that's what I would you know, if we do vote that, that's what I would hope would happen as well. But I think we took that action in the past because that agency was late with their audit for like 10 years in a row. And this agency has been late 5 years in a row.
For me, as I actually truly believe they might get it in, but, you know, to be fair, I want to motion to cancel the First Followers Program year 2026 contracts as of March 31st, 2026, only if they do not get it in by then.
Thank you very much. Would anyone like to second? I will second. So Ara's motions and McClay seconds. Any further discussion?
Are you doing the second motion so that releasing the rest of it, the January, February, and March payments that wasn't
We could restate the motion. So there is a portion of that that gives instruction to the staff on once the audit comes in what to do about the payments that have currently been suspended.
I just wanted to know if that's part of the motion since it's written.
So I guess maybe an amendment of the motion first, and then we can,
Sure.
Okay. I motion to amend this motion to state that, of course, only if it's not turned in by March 31st, and if so, then release the January, February, and March payments after the program year 2025 audit is submitted and any follow-up issues resolved.
Thank you. I will second the amendment. So Ara's has amended the motion and McClay has seconded. Any discussion on this motion before we vote?
All right, my brain is fried, so I need someone to draw me a picture here. So if they, how I'm interpreting this, if they turn in their audit on April 1st, that means we are not doing April through the end of the contract of June, okay, is how I interpret this motion. But if they turn it in April 1st, we're still going to pay them for January, February, and March payments?
Once the issues are resolved, yes.
Okay, but even with a valid audit on April 1st, they will not get April, May, June?
Correct, because it would be past the deadline.
Okay, thank you.
I think for me, the stick is the current application, not withholding payments. So, I mean, that's how I've always taken audits, other than if an agency is no longer receiving funding from us, making sure that the audit is completed and we do get the money if they decide they're not doing an audit or we're chasing them down for the audit, like we had with one, a year or two ago. So I would vote against this motion. I'd vote for the first motion and then just readdress it as whenever the audit comes in, if it comes in, and then talk about that, the issue when the application comes up for review.
Thank you for sharing that. I did want to mention, like, their payments already are suspended because it wasn't in by December 31st. So this would just be to determine, I mean, essentially, as has been mentioned, once they turn their audit in, January, February, March would be released once issues are resolved. But if it's not in by March 31st, then, you know, basically April, May, June would not be paid.
I also think it's just kind of ironic that we talked about funding agencies that provide housing, and this is one we're talking about not funding that's providing housing for vulnerable population in the community if they don't have their audit in by March 31st, which seems like it is definitely possible given the situation that they described.
Yes, and I mean, this would be, I mean, it's the same exact action we took with Promise Healthcare. We trusted that they would get the audit in, and they did. I understand, though, if board members do vote against it, the audit, the beginning of the audit period was July 1st, 2025, so they have had 9 months to do it.
I would also just state that Promise Healthcare is a very large organization, so I have less room for mistakes or delays with an organization that funds and supplies a lot of people versus a more local agency that is trying to build and create something for the long term here. Promise Healthcare, even if we don't fund them, is not going to go away.
Point taken. Any further discussion before we vote? All right. Seeing none, I will go ahead and restate the motion, and we will take a roll call vote. So the motion on the table is to cancel the First Followers Program Year 2026 contract as of March 31st, 2026, releasing the January, February, and March payments after the Program Year 2025 audit is submitted and any follow-up issues resolved. May I have a roll call?
Actually, we still haven't passed the amendment of the motion yet.
Okay. But we have to vote on the amendment.
Sorry.
Thank you. I'm not used to doing amendments. My Robert's Rules is challenged. Okay. So first, the motion has been amended to state that it would cancel the First Followers Program Year 2026 contracts as of March 31st, 2026, releasing the January, February, and March payments after the Program Year 2025 audit is submitted and any follow-up issues are resolved. So the current, this is to, we are voting on amending the motion. Can we do this with a simple vote, or do we need to do a roll call to amend?
You don't need a roll call.
Thank you. All those in favor of amending the motion, but we're not voting on the motion, just to amend it, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All those opposed, same sign. Okay, I think we need to take a roll call vote because I think only like three people voted. So again, this is the motion is to amend the current motion. We are not voting on the motion. Can I have a roll call?
Elaine Palencia.
Yes.
Kyle Patterson.
No.
Jane Sprandl.
Yes.
John Paul Joachim.
No.
Den Arez.
Yes.
Alejandro Gomez.
Yes.
Tony Nichols.
Yes.
Molly McClay.
Yes. All right, so the amendment has passed. So now we will vote on the amended motion. The amended motion that we are voting on is to cancel the First Followers Program Year 2026 contracts as of March 31st, 2026, releasing the January, February, and March payments after the Program Year 2025 audit is submitted and any follow-up issues resolved. May I have a roll call?
Jane Sprandl.
No.
John Paul Joachim.
No.
Den Arez.
Yes.
Alejandro Gomez.
No.
Tony Nichols.
No.
Elaine Palencia.
No.
Kyle Patterson.
No.
Molly McClay.
Yes. The motion fails, so we will need to pick another motion. So we could vote to continue the contracts, even if the audit is not in on time. One type of motion we used last year that we did not put down this year is that we could defer the decision until the audit is in. So any further discussion on what actions we should take?
I mean, I would move for the first motion that we discussed.
To?
I would move to continue the First Followers Program Year 2026 contracts withholding payments until the Program Year 2025 audit is submitted and any follow-up issues resolved.
All right. Can I have a second?
I will second that.
All right. We have a motion and a second from Joachim and Sprandl. Any further discussion on this? So again, this would be to say, essentially, no matter at what point you turn in this audit, even if it's a year from now, you're current PY 2026 contract will be fulfilled, although your payments will continue to be withheld until the audit comes in. So we're essentially, instead of giving a hard deadline, we're removing the deadline completely. Yes, Lynn?
Since this is a board discussion and you have a motion on the floor, I want to just share that in the rules, there's a limit, and this is because of our experience in recent years. We would not necessarily hold the payments longer than 1 year after it was due. So December 31st of 2026.
By not hold them, would that mean they would be automatically released even if the audit wasn't in, or
they would
just be canceled?
That's an option, though. That's just in the rules. That's an option. You're not voting on that. But just to say, if so much time passed, it becomes a problem for your budget. You know, so then you could make a decision at that time. But it's in the rules as a right that you could assert, just so you know.
All right. Thank you, Lynn. I am not going to be voting yes on this. I don't think we should remove the deadline completely. I think that I would prefer to defer the decision till the audit actually comes in, because if we don't, there's no actual incentive to get it in a timely manner, which puts burden on us and on the staff.
Any further discussion? Think the application doesn't incentivize them to get the audit in?
That's the next item we're voting on, which is if we're going to consider applications whose audits are not in. So it's a separate item.
But even if we do consider it, I think that is a factor that we will consider when we are choosing, especially with a year where we have such a large gap in funding. So that would be my counter.
That is a point well taken. We have not previously, we have, the only way in which we have utilized that minimum requirement to make decisions about applications is to defer the discussion of them. We've never actually said your application isn't eligible because the audit's not in. So I do not have confidence in the board doing that, but potentially we may take that action later. Any further discussion on this motion to continue the contract without a deadline?
I second the motion. I don't even think we seconded yet.
Oh. Okay. No further discussion. So the motion on the table is to continue the First Followers Program Year 2026 contracts, withholding payments until the Program Year 2025 audit is submitted and any follow-up issues resolved. May I have a roll call?
John Paul Joachim.
Yes.
Dan Arroz.
Yes.
Alejandro Gomez.
Yes.
Tony Nichols.
Yes.
Elaine Palencia.
Yes.
Kyle Patterson.
Yes.
Jane Sprandl.
Yes.
Molly McClay.
No. The motion passes. The contracts will be continued, and payments will be continued to be withheld until the audit is submitted and any follow-up issues resolved. So we will next move to the second set of motions, and this is regarding Program Year 2027 funding requests. The minimum requirements of the application are for agencies to have submitted an audit, a financial review report, or an audited balance sheet with the application, and several agencies have not. In prior years, we have considered those applications with all the other ones, even though those minimum requirements were not made. Last year, we voted to defer consideration of each of those requests until the audits came in, and then for each application whose audit did come in, at that time of the audit coming in and issues being resolved, we considered the application at that point in time, rather than considering them all at once with all of the others. We could decide that we're going to just consider all of the requests anyway. We could decide right now that we're going to deny consideration of any requests that whose audit or equivalent document has not been turned in at this point, or we could defer consideration until they come in. like we did last year. So I would open discussion on this topic.
Liz, we've been having the discussion about the First Followers one. I knew this was coming up. So in my own mind, I was thinking the thing we just voted on is for this last funding year, and to draw the line going forward would be a good, this would be a good place to draw it in 2027, considering those, it's going to be different now. So.
So with that said, correct me if I'm wrong, at this time, on page 35, we've got First Followers, GCAP, Uniting Pride, Win Recovery, Family First Advocacy, Habitat for Humanity, TOSH Incorporated, and We Never Walk Alone. So those are the ones that we were still waiting for some kind of documentation, correct?
So some of them have turned it in. They were just not turned in by the application deadline.
Okay, so Habitat is 100% compliant now? Okay. Anyone else 100%?
Uniting Pride and Win Recovery have also turned theirs in.
Okay.
So in the middle of the page, not bolded, there's a list. Family First Advocacy, First Followers, GCAP, and TASC. And you can add to it Brightpoint.
Okay, Brightpoint. Okay, so next question. Like Ms. Polinsky has said, I agree. I think April 1st, I mean, because again, we've set a deadline of March 31st. So I think April 1st, if these four and five individuals have not turned in the stuff, pretty much their applications are tossed. I don't want the staff to evaluate them. I don't want to defer nothing. I'm done talking about it. If we're going to draw the line in the sand, and I think we all say it, but none of us have done it, you know. Okay, so Molly is done. Okay.
So, Jane, from what I'm hearing, you're kind of leaning toward the second motion, but that you would want to put a date in it. So, like, if the funding request has not been supported by one of those documents by March 31st, 2026, then we would deny consideration. But any that got it in by March 31st would be considered?
Yes, that is what I'm proposing, if that's what other board members feel is acceptable.
I would go with the first motion. I would go with considering them and waiting until the audit. Obviously, I think in previous years we had three that didn't have their audit in on time, and we looked at their applications and waited to see if they had their audit in when we were deciding funding.
That's the third motion.
Yeah. Defer consideration. I think we can still say we're going to think about it. I think First Followers is one that is I really would want to fund. Regardless of the previous years of the audits taking time and having issues with follow-up. GCAP is another one that I would really want to fund. They take care of people with HIV in our community. The medical director is not doing well. They are going through a hard time. That is one that I would give a lot of leniency to. I don't know the other two, but again, you know, I forgot who said it last time we were here. Like, we choose what we want to put in our portfolio, what we want to have filling in the gaps of the service in the community. And people that want to provide services to the most vulnerable are not always the best or most business-oriented. And I get that, and I think maybe because I'm a pediatrician, I'm very lenient, very more sympathetic to that, and just wanting to make sure that the end goal is what we're looking at, not looking more paternalistically where we're just very cut and dry and being done with it. I feel like our staff is okay with handling this. I know, you know, that has always been one of my big concerns, to make sure they're not burning out. As long as I feel that way, I am okay being more lenient at this time.
Sorry, I just want to clarify. So if we do the motion to consider, that means all applications whose audits are not in will be automatically considered with all of the other applications, which means the staff will need to review them even if the audit is not in. To defer consideration would be to make the call when each application's audit comes in, which is what we did last year, was defer. So I just wanted to clarify that. It seems like there's multiple motions that have been mentioned, but I wanted to clarify, because consider means at this stage we're just automatically going to review all of them, even if the audit's not in. And that's not what we did last year, and I am not going to vote yes to that, but I did want to clarify. Because deferred definitely means we're taking it as a case-by-case basis as each audit comes in.
And while that's annoying, that's what we're here for.
I think for me, the motion to defer would be what I would vote on.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So it sounds like, you know, there's been discussion of all three possible motions. Some have mentioned to, you know, not consider any that aren't in by March 31st, because that's the end of the grace period. And some have mentioned, you know, wanting to do this more case by case. So whoever wants to scramble to make a motion.
I motion to defer consideration of any program year 2027 funding request not supported by a program year 2025 audit or financial review report or audited balance sheet until such time as the audit or financial review report or audited balance sheet has been filled and any follow-up issues resolved.
Thank you. May I have a second?
I'll second.
All right, Ara's motions, Nichols seconds. Any final discussion? So I'm, again, just going to clarify what we're voting on. As it stands, in April, we will be reviewing all applications that have met this minimum requirement. The applications that have not yet had their audit or equivalent document turned in by then, we will determine if we're going to review those applications as each one comes in, but we won't be reviewing them with the rest of them. I mean, it could be that half of these agencies turn in their audits, and then we will review them in April, since our first review is not till April 22nd, but that we will be taking all of those on a case-by-case basis, and the ones that whose are in will be reviewed first. Any further discussion?
Well, just to say that means when you don't have a lot of money, that the ones that are reviewed first may get funded, and the ones that come in late may not get funded. I mean, so there is your stick, you know.
Yeah, and I mean, that did happen last year. There was we did have more money to go around last year, so an agency whose audit didn't come in until July, we were able to review it in July. We voted on it. We funded it. But this year, that's probably not going to happen. Any other discussion before we vote? All right, seeing none, I will restate the motion. The motion is to defer consideration of any program year 2027 funding request not supported by a program year 2025 audit or financial review report or audited balance sheet until such time as the audit or financial review report or audited balance sheet has been filed and any such follow-up issues resolved. May I have a roll call?
Jen Arias.
Yes.
Alejandro Gomez.
Yes.
Tony Nichols.
Yes.
Elaine Palencia.
Yes.
Kyle Patterson.
Yes.
Jane Sprandel.
Yes.
Jean-Paul Joachim.
Yes.
Molly McClay.
Yes. With that, the motion to defer consideration of those requests passes. So we can now move on to new business and no more voting items. So our next item of new business is program year 2025 IDD service activity data. This is on pages 37 through 46 of the packet. For information, a briefing memorandum presents full year IDD claims data with analysis of utilization per program and by selected individual cases. No action is needed, but I would love for Lynn and anyone you designate to share more about this report.
I just kind of need to take a cleansing breath. I really appreciate how hard these last couple of discussions were for y'all. And we really need to hear this, and we need to think about these things too. So thank you for taking the time. I know the snacks aren't really like quite to the level of how hard the discussion might be. I feel like maybe pizza would be. So thank you. And I just kind of want to breathe out. Like, here, this memo is one of my most favorite things. I look forward to this every year. We get this once a year. This is a Kim Bowdry. Oh, I'm asking her if she wants to talk about it because she's on there listening. Looks at, I think sometimes it's like 88,000 lines of data to come up with this. And it's very meaningful to me because in the developmental disability services, you have, I mean, you know that with the mental health services, you could be funding a program for $25,000 that reaches thousands of kids with really important prevention education, but it's because it's just one class, one time. So you have really, really high numbers, and sometimes in the same mental health and substance use space, you have really low numbers for intensive services, for maybe for people who are in crisis or who are just always going to need the support. So you have a really big range of what to expect from the cost and the hours spent with a person or on their behalf. With developmental disabilities, there is also a range, but it tends to be much more the intensive supports, many more hours. A lot of people are accessing similar programs, and they kind of, like, they're getting different things out of the programs, and we just kind of wanted to know who's doing what so we could really see what the utilization was and what degree of overlap there might be. So we collect data, and Kim does this. I think it can be entered every month, but it's minimum quarterly, about every person who served in most of these DD contracts, every person who served, what the service was, how many hours, whether it was on their behalf or with them, and whether it was in the community or in an office, like a facility space. So I still don't know if Kim wants to talk about it, but what I like about it is, first of all, what I like about it is how much work everybody puts into it throughout the year, and then you can give these really cool case studies. Are you ready to do it? You should talk about it. Yay.
Yeah, so it's not every person served. It's every TPC. So every TPC gets a claim entered, and in some programs, some non-treatment plan clients get a claim entered as well. So over the course of each program year, the claims are entered. At the end of those years, I download all of the claims from the online system, and then I sort them by program, by service type, by place, and how many hours, and by date, obviously. So then I do a full review of each program and tally up all of their clients served and all of the TPCs served and the hours that they were served. And then I take that data further down and break it into specific clients. And I included just some overall details of the clients served in comparison with program year 24. And then I provided, I think, maybe 10, I don't know how many, specific clients, what services they participated in, and the hours
down,
that they
right?
were served.
Is it right here?
Yeah, that's further down.
I'm
yeah,
sorry. Okay.
No, you're okay. I kind of skipped over that. Sorry. And then further down from this, I take one specific person and I include all of his services since the claims level data began in program year 2018. And so you can see how he has transitioned in his services. And he's a specific person that I know, so I know he's getting older like me, and I can see how his service needs have changed and So for that, it's kind of cool to look at that. Sad that we're all aging, I guess.
And this is a person, when you first started collecting the claims, this is someone who really jumped out to us because he was receiving services from almost every agency and a few different programs. And so the way I started thinking of him is he's our key informant. This is the person who can tell us how the system really is. So it's nice that you're tracking. But the other thing you can do further up, and you didn't say much about this, but you did, and I paused on it, is if anybody has a calculator, they can look at some of the figures that Kim is providing and figure out what an hour of service costs in each program. And they can also figure out what a service costs for each person served in the program. And I think those are really important if you have services that look like this very same and you want to compare, like who's doing it, you know, who's doing it for a better price. And then you can ask questions about why the prices might be different. But a lot of times we're finding the costs are very similar across programs, and they're actually very similar to the state rates. So it's kind of, that is, was an unexpected and happy surprise. But I, that's something I was doing like externally every year, just looking for the cost of each program per hour and per person. So that's in there too, but I'm more like your case studies. I really, really appreciate that because it is a really special system and a lot of people don't understand how it's utilized or why it costs so much money. Anyway, thank you, Kim. Sorry.
Any discussion from the board on this?
I love the data. The data is cool.
Yeah, I think this is just a monumental effort to be able to, like, just to have that level of kind of, like, the cross understanding of the programs and how they serve in different ways, and to be able to see, you know, examples of, you know, different individuals and how they participate in the programs, and to see one over time is just very, very cool and shows how important the programs are and what a difference they can make. So I give major props to you, Kim. You and Leon both in the last couple meetings have been presenting us with some very, very cool stuff that I know has taken a lot of work. So I commend you for that. Any other discussion?
Also, just the timing of Leon and Kim's reports to you, that's not a coincidence. This is supposed to be helpful information for the difficult task ahead. So anyway, so if you need to look at it again, just let us know.
Yes, thank you. Any other discussion? I used to think that having the more positive updates after the hard discussions was better, but I'm not so sure I feel that way tonight.
I do.
You like it. You like
I
it.
I like that you all haven't left yet.
That's a good point. Well, we can go ahead and move on to the report section. So first we have staff reports on pages 47 through 94. For information only, the packet includes a report from the executive director on legislative and policy conference activities. Other staff reports have been deferred to allow for focus on the review of agency applications because it has taking a lot of energy and time and effort from staff. So, Lynn, would you want to share anything about your report?
Yes. I want to say a few things. I started doing this because a previous county board chair told me, you can't go to all these conferences and not give us back some kind of product. It wasn't Kyle Patterson, but it was one early, like just a little bit before you. And I learned a lot from that person. And so I've faithfully provided notes. If you pay for me to go somewhere, I'm going to take notes and bring them back. So in these notes, there are a few things I wanted just, it's too many pages, but there are a few things in there that I think are kind of cool. The very first one was the first presentation we had was from the director of HRSA. HRSA funds federally qualifying health centers. Champaign County has at least four. One of them is Promise Healthcare. HRSA, for I don't know why, has enjoyed some kind of protection during this federal policy madness and funding cuts. They actually are getting more money. So we can maybe conclude that Promise will survive. You know, they might still need our money too, but I'm just saying that's really good news. And the other similar bit of news is that we heard about and from SAMHSA several times. If you don't, that's the substance abuse, mental health, or wait, I don't know. It's the Administrative Agency for Substance Use and Mental Health Funding. And they have been the lead in the certified community behavioral health clinic development, which you have the packet for next week's study session. You're going to learn all about CCBHCs from Rosecrans, which has the CCBHC contract through the state of Illinois. That's federal dollars. Well, SAMHSA, while they cut all their staff and can't really administer programs very effectively, their money hasn't been cut. So there's this idea that, like, as long as you keep the door open, you can rebuild SAMHSA when the federal administration chooses to do that. So there's also some hope that this project Rosecrans has been working on with state and federal funding through that project will also survive. It's just, it may be slowed down because there's no one working at SAMHSA to administer all these funds. So that's a little bit tricky. So those are two pieces of really good news. Another tidbit that you might not notice in here is that I literally said to Senator Durbin as he was walking out of the room, "Muck Fishigan." I really said it, and then I thought, what? That was just so, like, I've been here too long. And then there was also, at the same visit when we were talking with Senator Durbin, there was something really interesting came up that has relevance to Champaign County, and that is that Illinois representatives were really pushing for the federal Housing Financing Administration to release the data that it has, which is public data, paid for by the public, but it's not been made public yet, about tax valuation practices across the country, because there's a researcher who has studied Champaign County and several other communities and found that property taxes are also regressive. They're especially regressive here. So this would take a really long time for it to mean anything to us, but it could change the amount of property tax that we can levy, because Champaign County has a lot of higher value homes that are apparently underassessed and lots of lower value property that's overassessed. So releasing the data on valuation practices would give assessors what they need to self-correct. Anyway, isn't that cool? I think that I've said enough. But there was, you know, other interesting stuff. Also, my buddy who was always introducing maternal health and infant mortality policy resolutions and just recently won election, she's in here somewhere too. But anyway, that's it. I think, you know, I love all this information, but those were the highlights to me. So
thank you so much, Lynn. Any comments from the board? I regret I have not been able to read the report yet, but I am looking forward to doing so, and I appreciate all of your efforts to be to keep us all informed on these things, but also your advocacy over the years at various different levels. So thank you. Any other thoughts from the board? All right, seeing none, we will next move to the evaluation capacity building project update. An oral update will be provided. And we also have a link to the resources that the team has developed linked here in the packet. So we are excited to get some positive news.
Happy hump day, everybody. Woohoo! In terms of the evaluation reporting, so I'm Jacinda Dariotis. I'm leading the project, and I have great colleagues, Rachel Jackson Gordon and Nate Underland. We've been working the last month a lot with our technical assistance programs and partners, and are coming to the end of a couple of the surveys for their outcome measures. So we've worked with them through their logic model and how to think about their outcomes, and have now developed surveys with them to have outcomes that are relevant to their needs, and those will be launched soon. One of them has a couple of interns coming into their agency and are wanting the interns to help with administering some of the surveys. So we're getting that done and out very, very soon. And so all three of our technical assistance partners are actually coming to the end of their survey finalization so that they can collect the data that they need to say what they need to say about their programs and to get information about those. We've been working diligently with our working group on developing our in-person survey development tutorial, I would say, hands-on experience, as well as our micro-learning that we're polishing up and finalizing so that we can give that as homework, because everyone loves homework, right? Well, 3-minute video is not too bad, right? It's not the 15-second TikTok. But anyway, it's better than the hour-long lecture that you get sometimes, right? So, and it doesn't make you cry. Hopefully it makes you laugh a little bit. But so we're working on that and finalizing that, as well as a one-pager. So we are addressing the different types of modalities of learning for individuals. We're also working on our annual report, which I know you're dying to read. You're just like overcome with enthusiasm for reading yet another report when you have so many decisions to make. But at any rate, that will be turned in by April 30th when it's due, and then we'll discuss it during the May meeting if that fits your schedule. And if it doesn't, then we can push it off to June. So those are our major ticket items so far for the last month, and I welcome any questions, comments, concerns that you might have about the work that we're doing.
Thank you very much. Any questions or comments from the board?
Was that upbeat enough for you? Yay, yay, yay. All right. Well, have a great evening. Thank you so much for all your support, and we look forward to our next year.
Thank you very much. We appreciate all you do for our programs. All right, next we will move to community behavioral health needs assessment activities. These are on pages 95 through 98 of the packet. For information only, our notes from the Community Health Plan Steering Committee's February 23rd, 2026 meeting. So Lynn, would you share with us about this?
This is yet another ADA compliant document. It takes a long time. So, and I did share it back with the original author, so he'll know how to do this next time. There are these work groups that you all had expressed some interest in before, but I have not seen a schedule. I haven't seen notes from any of them. So I think that he was focused on getting a steering committee together. I couldn't make it that day, but I thought you'd like to see what they talked about. I expect to hear from him about the work groups again pretty soon, and I'll share that out through email so that folks have an opportunity to, like, these are all open to the public, so you don't have to make a commitment. Just go if you like it. He does an overview of what each work group has talked about so far in this outline. So anyway, that's it.
Thank you very much. Any questions or comments from the board? All right, seeing none, we'll move to the next report from the Disability Resource Expo and AIR updates. So oral updates will be provided, and there are links to these programs listed here. So Lynn, would you provide updates?
We haven't met again with that advisory group. I don't think so. Maybe I'm wrong. Kim and Chandra may correct me, but we do have a meeting, just this core advisory group. You would know.
Advisor group for the expo.
For the expo, yeah. That we had one meeting with that advisory group, and I sent notes around that Jacinda took for us with a list of things we probably ought to figure out at the next meeting. And then it was really hard to find a date that everybody could attend, so it's next Monday. It's just a core group. It's not the whole steering committee. And one of the things on the list is we need to communicate with the steering committee. So we're really in the early stages of figuring out what to do with what we have. I think figuring out what we have is the issue, right? And a meeting with someone the following week who used to have an interest in helping us coordinate the expo. I do not know if that's why he wants to meet, but wouldn't that be a lucky coincidence? So I'll let you know. For the other one, Alliance for Inclusion and Respect, we had a meeting, one planning meeting. We don't usually have a lot of meetings of that because it's kind of like the festival. The Ebert Fest puts all this stuff together, and then we just put together the art show, which is usually Stephanie Howard Gallo, and then Chandra may put together a community screening of our film. It would be in a school classroom. Eric Pearson, who's a scholar who attends the festival all the time and is a U of I grad, tends to go to those community screenings and talk with students, and this time we would also have the director. So it's cool. We're still trying to figure that out. We've been talking about a potential local panelist, and Molly McClay had an idea for that, so that's something I threw out there too. This year they don't have a paid full-time coordinator. The festival, captains or whatever, are trying to do all this stuff themselves without staff. So a lot of things that used to be really easy to figure out, I'm just waiting forever to find out. Meanwhile, I have two new members for AIR. One of them is the Marion County Horizon Center. They have a small group home here in town, and then they have other group homes around the state. Their artists have been working with us lately, so now they're a full member. And then a woman who's got, she has a law practice called Art Converge. She just is the most recently joining member, and they're both going to provide some donations of like food and labor, so that helps us a lot. And then I also have a conversation planned over the weekend with Zeus Dariotis, who is one of our art supporters, and I'm going to list him as officially an art supporter. You might remember him from a few meetings ago, talking about art that he bought at the expo, and I'm going to talk to him about what is important about art this weekend and get some good quotes. So he's got my phone number. We're on. So anyway, that's all good news. Like, it's not as hard as the expo to put this together, but it is a little tricky this year. And then I don't know what we'll do in the future. Like, there's lots of little art festivals and film festivals, and my hope is that, you know, this project has grown enough that the artists that we've been working with and the agencies that have been involved would just be invited to that community stuff. Like, that's the goal. So maybe we're there, but we'll find out. Okay.
I was wondering, what are the dates for the Ebert Fest where we'll have the art show and the film?
I don't know the film schedule yet. That's a fun thing that we have no idea when. But April 17 and 18 are the only days of the festival, and our plan is to have the art show both days for as long as people can sit there. And sometimes there's folks who don't want to leave until the janitors are telling them to, but most people get tired and they leave when the sales slow down. So we'll see. Hopefully somebody would be there if you stop by.
And if any board members wanted to get more involved with the expo or AIR or both, how would they do that?
They could just email me. Email me.
It.
Yeah.
Any questions or comments from the board on these updates? All right, seeing none, we will next move on to public participation agency input. Again, members of the public are welcome to speak with the Mental Health Board. We cannot respond directly, but may use input to inform future actions. You can either fill out a comment card, come forward to the podium, or if you're online, you can put something into the chat or raise your hand on Zoom if you'd like to speak. I may limit individual time to 5 minutes and total time to 20 minutes. Is there anyone in person or online who would like to make public comment now? We have someone online. Please, can we unmute them, or they can unmute themselves to make comment?
Go ahead.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jessie Hagen-Mueller, Assistant Director of Community Services at Champaign County Regional Planning Commission. I just wanted to provide that we do a community needs assessment update annually, and every 3 years do a larger lift. And when you were speaking to prioritization, I thought that resource may be helpful for you. So I wanted to offer to share that with Lynn to support your all's planning efforts. I also wanted to add to the comments that were made earlier by some of our colleagues around the strategic plan to end homelessness. I did put a survey link in the chat, so if any of you are interested in providing your input to help shape that strategic plan or sharing it with the folks that you work with, we are very interested in getting feedback to support that strategic planning process. And that plan also might be helpful for the board's purposes once it's ready, which I believe will be probably too late for decision making, but just wanted to share that information.
Thank you very much for your comment. And Lynn, would you be able to grab that survey link and send it to us?
Yep.
Perfect. Is there anyone else in person or online who would like to make public comment?
It's been a long day. I'm trying to use a computer somehow.
All right. It does not appear that we have anyone else to make public comments, so we will now move on to board-to-board reports. This is on pages 99 through 100, the packet. Today's packet was exactly 100 pages, which I thought was fun. So as always, members of the Mental Health Board can serve as liaison to agency or community board meetings. There's a list of all of these meetings on these pages 99 through 100. And if you'd like to get involved with that further, you can contact Stephanie Howard Gallo. Is there anyone who would like to share a board-to-board report? Go ahead.
Well, I'll just very, very quickly mention a couple of things that happened at Community Coalition. As you may know, the police have been coordinating with Courage Connection and an integrated crime analysis and a partnership, and they're seeing a decrease in incidents of domestic violence because of that partnership. And teen dating violence, though, has reared its head. So that's a problem that's being looked at now. One quote from that discussion was, "Violence is an illness, and we need to look at it that way, and not just as, you know, some bad acting out." The other thing is that the City of Champaign's co-responders team is up and running. It's been so long. And they're just right now doing soft calls, as they say, as part of their training. They haven't gotten into, you know, really serious calls. But that's a nice goal that has been met, and it was a long time coming. And I'll just stop there.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else who would like to make a report? All right, seeing none, we will next move on to county board input. So this is our opportunity for our county board representative to give us any updates that we might want to hear from county board.
Hi. I was asked a few questions last week by Lynn. Do you remember what those questions were, Lynn? Not sure if they were really relevant or if I've had any answers for you, but...
What did we talk? We talked about so much.
It was about an appointment for something.
Oh.
But that hasn't happened yet. So I was like, I really had nothing to give.
That's, you're right, though.
Yeah.
Thank you for having a good memory.
I try.
It was about an appointment for the vacancy.
Yeah. So that hasn't happened yet. But I will let y'all know if I hear about it soon, hopefully soon. So.
My understanding is the county board meeting got postponed, so it was supposed to be tomorrow, but it's going to be next Thursday.
That's a good communication to spread, yeah.
So the county board meeting has been postponed from tomorrow to next Thursday, the 26th, and maybe
by then, maybe they will appoint a vacancy at that meeting. It depends on if it got on the agenda. Lynn is in the process of finding out.
So. I looked for the agenda earlier today. It wasn't posted yet.
Yes.
So it may take, you know, a human being has to put it together and it has to be ADA compliant.
Yeah, I actually did get it mailed to me on Tuesday, but I didn't see anything like that on there either. I assume it would be like on a committee first and then to the committee of the whole, but if it's already been discussed, probably already was. Hold on a second. Just give me one second. I have an easy way to access these things. So,
you know what? It could be that we'll see an addendum.
Yeah.
I'm going to keep looking.
Because, yeah, it was mailed, but it's not on the site. You are correct.
I told you I'm going to keep doing that math.
Yeah.
Until more money shows up. I'll keep looking for that agenda item because it would be great to have a full board for April.
Yeah.
Sounds like there has been communication with the county executive on the imperative nature of getting that vacancy filled. So any other updates from county board?
Not that I can think of that is very pertinent. Oh, yes. They added an agency to the facilities for corrections. So JDC and the General Department of Corrections, they added mental health and health services. They just, contracted an agency for that. They did a holistic review of everything, and it sounded like it also is going to save the county money. But they did a more holistic review of we need better, we need 24/7, you know, most of the things that happen overnight, like overdoses and needs, mental health needs are always needed, right? I mean, so yeah, they have a better agency now that actually might save us money in the county. So that would be cool.
That's great to hear. Any questions on the county board input? Thank you very much. So next we'll move to Champaign County Developmental Disabilities Board input. Our meetings are off cycle from each other now, right? So we're not on the same day anymore, so we don't usually have direct input, but no updates. So next we'll move to board announcements and input. Do any board members have any announcements or input?
I just had a quick one. A couple of you are aware I spent my day being humbled. My husband's employee was evicted yesterday. So he's a smart man. He called me in a panic, and who do I call? So he did some calls yesterday. I did some calls yesterday. But when she tells him at like 4:12 in the afternoon, there wasn't a lot we could do. So I went with her last night because I wanted her to have housing. Which when we started the meeting, we were talking about housing. Another thing I find appalling in my experience is you can pull into an empty hotel and they can't give you a good rate, especially when I'm like, hey, she's going to pay cash. If you need to use my card as an incidental, I get it. $68 last night. She was safe. She was, you know, warm, da da da. Today, I picked her up. We spent our day getting an ID. I personally have never been to the soup kitchen. I had never been to Empty Tomb. Haven't been to DMV since they got their act together there. And I was just today humbled in the fact how blessed I am personally, why I'm on this board advocating for people. And it's not an easy system. And, you know, and I said that to people today. I feel like I'm at or above intelligence, and this is hard. So, you know, we say it a lot of times. It's not a cliche. If people don't have safe housing, no wonder they're struggling mentally. And so last Monday, I think it was, Lynn and Leon and I happened to all, like, go to the, you know, ending homelessness kickoff thing. And again, I learned a lot. And so I know some of us have been on this board for a while. I learn something every day. And, you know, today I've almost been in tears all day because this woman needs so much help, and I can't give it all to her. You know, but I told, you know, I wrote down everything we accomplished today because she was very stressed out. And I started to list what Jane's going to do. And so tomorrow I'm going to make the call to RPC and say, hey, you know, I actually sent Lynn today a note that I had sent with someone else. And, you know, and I said, she needs a caseworker. I think she has early dementia. I'm pretty sure she has a learning disability. She was officially evicted. Luckily, I called, talked to the apartment complex. That lady said to me at one point, I wish I would have met you months ago. Where were you then? And I said, she wasn't ready for help. And so luckily they're going to be very gracious. They're going to let me clean out the apartment. Because I said to her, I was like, surely you want some of these clothes, some of these mementos. No, just get rid of it. So luckily I live out in the country and I have a pole barn. So I'm going to get some totes and I'm going to box up everything I think she may need in the future. I talked to her today. We're going to get you an apartment at some point. So we need some, you know, plates and forks and things like that. So again, sorry, I always ramble, but, you know, I'm a hard ass at times, but my heart is really true. And, I'm very thankful that I am so blessed, and don't think I don't recognize it, because I do. So thank you.
Thank you very much for sharing. Is there anyone else who wants to make any announcements or input? All right. With that, we will go ahead and adjourn. Our next study session is next Wednesday, March 25th at 5:45 p.m. right here in the Shields Carter Room of the Bennett Administrative Center. And we'll get to we'll have some cool presentations next week. So nothing about applications or funding. We will be learning. Really good stuff. So I hope to see you all. Our last study session was not well attended. So I hope to see all of you at this one. And Lynn is putting the snacks. It is not the responsibility of the snacks to get us here, but they are appreciated. All right. With that, we will adjourn. Have a good night.
Recording stopped.